Bridge to Terabithia, Disc 3.
Chapter 7. The Golden Room. Mr. Burke had begun to repair the old Perkins place. After Christmas, Mrs. Burke was right in the middle of writing a book, so she wasn't available to help, which left Leslie the jobs of hunting and fetching. For all his smartness with politics and music, Mr. Burke was inclined to be absent-minded. He would put down the hammer to pick up the how-to book, and then lose the hammer between there and the project he was working on. Leslie was good at finding things for him, and he liked her company as well. When she came home from school and on the weekends, he wanted her around. Leslie explained all this to Jess. Jess tried going to Terabithia alone, but it was no good. It needed Leslie to make the magic. He was afraid he would destroy everything by trying to force the magic on his own, when it was plain that the magic was reluctant to come for him. If he went home, either his mother was after him to do some chore, or Maybelle wanted him to play Barbie. Lord, he wished a million times he'd never helped buy that stupid doll. He'd no more than lie down on the floor to paint, then Maybelle would be after him to put an arm back on or snap up a dress. Joyce Ann was worse. She got a devilish delight out of sitting smack down on his rump when he was stretched out working. If he yelled at her to get the heck off, she'd stick her index finger in the corner of her mouth and holler, which would, of course, crank up his mother. "Jesse Oliver, you leave that baby alone! What you mean, lying there in the middle of the floor, doing nothing anyway? Didn't I tell you I couldn't cook supper before you chopped wood for the stove?" Sometimes he would sneak down to the old Perkins place and find Prince Tarion crying on the porch, where Mr. Burke had exiled him. You couldn't blame the man. No one could get anything done with that animal grabbing his hand or jumping up to lick his face. He'd take P.T. for a romp in the Burke's upper field. If it was a mild day, Miss Bessie would be mooing nervously from across the fence. She couldn't seem to get used to the yipping and snapping. Or maybe it was the time of year, the last dregs of winter spoiling the taste of everything. Nobody, human or animal, seemed happy. Except Leslie. She was crazy about fixing up that broken-down old wreck of a house. She loved being needed by her father. Half the time they were supposed to be working, they were just yakking away. She was learning, she related glowingly at recess, to understand her father. It had never occurred to Jess that parents were meant to be understood any more than the safe at the Millsburg First National was sitting around begging him to crack it. Parents were what they were. It wasn't up to you to try to puzzle them out. There was something weird about a grown man wanting to be friends with his own child. He ought to have friends his own age and let her have hers. Jess's feelings about Leslie's father poked up like a canker sore. You keep biting it, and it gets bigger and worse instead of better. You spend a lot of time trying to keep your teeth away from it. Then, sure as Christmas, you forget the silly thing and chomp right down on it. Lord, that man got in his way. It even poisoned what time he did have with Leslie. She'd be sitting there, bubbling away at recess, and it would be almost like the old times. Then, without warning, she'd say, "Bill thinks so-and-so." Chomp, right down on the old sore. Finally, she noticed. It took her until February. And for a girl as smart as Leslie, that was a long, long time.
"Why don't you like Bill?"
"Who said I didn't?"
"Jess Ahrens, how stupid do you think I am?"
"Pretty stupid, sometimes." But what he actually said was, "What makes you think I don't like him?"
"Well, you never come to the house anymore. At first I thought it was something I'd done, but it's not that. You still talk to me at school. Lots of times I see you in the field playing with P.T., but you don't even come near the door."
"You're always busy." He was uncomfortably aware of how much he sounded like Brenda when he said this.
Well, for spaghetti sauce, you could offer to help, you know.
It was like all the lights coming back on after an electrical storm. Lord, who was the stupid one? Still, it took him a few days to feel comfortable around Leslie's father. Part of the problem was he didn't know what to call him. Hey, he'd say, and both Leslie and her father would turn around. Mr. Burke? I wish you'd call me Bill, Jess.
Yeah.
He'd fumbled around with the name for a couple more days, but it came more easily with practice. It also helped to know some things that Bill, for all his brains and books, didn't know. Jess found he was really useful to him, not a nuisance to be tolerated or set out on the porch like P.T. You're amazing, Bill would say. Where did you learn that, Jess? Jess never quite knew how he knew things, so he'd shrug and let Bill and Leslie praise him to each other, though the work itself was praise enough. First, they ripped out the boards that covered the ancient fireplace, coming upon the rusty bricks like prospectors upon the mother lode. Next, they got the old wallpaper off the living room wall, all five garish layers of it. Sometimes, as they lovingly patched and painted, they listened to Bill's records or sang. Leslie and Jess teaching Bill some of Miss Edmund's songs, and Bill teaching them some he knew. At other times they would talk. Jess listened wonderingly as Bill explained things that were going on in the world. If Mama could hear him, she'd swear he was another Walter Cronkite instead of some hippie. All the Burks were smart. Not smart, maybe, about fixing things or growing things, but smart in a way Jess had never known real-life people to be. Like one day while they were working, Judy came down and read out loud to them, mostly poetry and some of it in Italian, which, of course, Jess couldn't understand. But he buried his head in the rich sound of the words and let himself be wrapped warmly around in the feel of the Burke's brilliance. They painted the living room gold. Leslie and Jess had wanted blue, but Bill held out for gold, which turned out to be so beautiful that they were glad they had given in. The sun would slant in from the west in the late afternoon until the room was brimful of light. Finally, Bill rented a sander from Millsburg Plaza, and they took off the black floor paint down to the wide oak boards and refinished them. No rugs, Bill said.
No, agreed Judy. It would be like putting a veil on the Mona Lisa.
When Bill and the children had finished razor-blading the last bits of paint off the windows and washed the panes, they called Judy down from her upstairs study to come and see. The four of them sat down on the floor and gazed around. It was gorgeous. Leslie gave a deep, satisfied sigh.
I love this room, she said. Don't you feel the golden enchantment of it? It is worthy to be...
Jess looked up in sudden alarm.
In a palace.
Relief. In such a mood, a person might even let a sworn secret slip. But she hadn't, not even to Bill and Judy, and he knew how she felt about her parents. She must have seen his anxiety because she winked at him across Bill and Judy, just as he sometimes winked at Maybelle over Joyce Ann's head. Terabithia was still, just for the two of them. The next afternoon, they called P.T. and headed for Terabithia. It had been more than a month since they had been there together, and as they neared the creek bed, they slowed down. Jess wasn't sure he still remembered how to be a king.
We've been away for many years, Leslie was whispering. How do you suppose the kingdom has fared in our absence?
Where have we been?
Conquering the hostile savages on our northern borders, she answered. But the lines of communication have been broken, and thus we do not have tidings of our beloved homeland for many a full moon.
How was that for regular queen talk? Jess wished he could match it. You think anything bad has happened?
We must have courage, my king. It may indeed be so.
They swung silently across the creek bed.
On the farther bank, Leslie picked up two sticks. "Thy sword, sire," she whispered.
Jess nodded. They hunched down and crept toward the stronghold like police detectives on TV.
"Hey, Queen, watch out, behind you!"
Leslie whirled and began to duel the imaginary foe. Then more came rushing upon them, and the shouts of the battle rang through Terabithia. The guardian of the realm raced about in happy puppy circles, too young as yet to comprehend the danger that surrounded them all.
"They have sounded the retreat," the brave queen cried. "Yay! Drive them out utterly, so they may never return and prey upon our people."
"Out you go! Out! Out!" All the way to the creek bed, they forced the enemy back, sweating under their winter jackets.
"At last, Terabithia is free once more."
The king sat down on a log and wiped his face, but the queen did not let him rest long.
"Sire, we must go at once to the Grove of the Pines and give thanks for our victory."
Jess followed her into the grove, where they stood silently in the dim light.
"Who do we thank?" he whispered.
The question flickered across her face.
"O God," she began.
She was more at home with magic than religion.
"O spirits of the grove,
thy right arm hast given us the victory."
He couldn't remember where he'd heard that one, but it seemed to fit. Leslie gave him a look of approval. She took up the words.
"Now grant protection to Terabithia, to all its people, and to us, its rulers."
"Oh!"
Jess tried hard not to smile.
"And to its puppy dog. And to Prince Tarion, its guardian and jester. Amen.
Amen."
They both managed somehow to keep the giggles buttoned in until they got out of the sacred place. A few days after the encounter with the enemies of Terabithia, they had an encounter of a different sort at school. Leslie came out at recess to tell Jess that she had started into the girls' room only to be stopped by the sound of crying from one of the stalls. She lowered her voice.
"This sounds crazy," she said, "but from the feet, I'm sure it's Janice Avery in there."
"You're kidding." The picture of Janice Avery crying on the toilet seat was too much for Jess to imagine.
"Well, she's the only one in school that has Willard Hughes's name crossed out on her sneakers. Besides, the smoke is so thick in there, you need a gas mask."
"Are you sure she was crying?"
"Jess Ahrens. I can tell if somebody's crying or not."
Lord, what was the matter with him? Janice Avery had given him nothing but trouble, and now he was feeling responsible for her, like one of the Burke's timber wolves or beached whales. She didn't even cry when kids teased her about Willard after the note.
"Yeah, I know."
He looked at her.
"Well," he said, "what should we do?"
"Do?" she asked.
"What do you mean, what should we do?"
How could he explain it to her?
"Leslie,
if she was an animal predator, we'd be obliged to try to help her." Leslie gave him a funny look.
"Well, you're the one who's always telling me I gotta care," he said. "But Janice Avery?
If she's crying, there gotta be something really wrong."
"Well, what are you planning to do?"
He flushed.
"I can't go into no girl's room."
"Oh, I get it. You're going to send me into the shark's jaws. No thank you, Mr. Ahrens."
"Leslie, I swear, I'd go in there if I could." He really thought he would, too.
"You ain't scared of her, are you, Leslie?"
He didn't mean it in a daring way. He was just dumbfounded by the idea of Leslie being scared. She flashed her eyes at him and tossed her head back in that proud way she had.
"Okay, I'm going in. But I want you to know, Jess Ahrens, I think it's the dumbest idea you ever had in your life."
He crept down the hall after her, and hid behind the nearest alcove to the girl's room door. He ought at least be there to catch her when Janice kicked her out. There was a quiet minute after the door swung shut behind Leslie. Then he heard Leslie say something to Janice. Next, a string of cuss words which were too loud to be blurred by the closed door. This was followed by some loud sobbing, not Leslie's, thank the Lord, and some sobbing and talking mixed up and the bell. He couldn't be caught staring at the door of the girl's room. But how could he leave? He'd be deserting in the line of fire. The rush of kids into the building settled it. He let himself be caught up in the stream and made his way to the basement steps, his brains still swirling with the sounds of cussing and sobbing. Back in the fifth grade classroom, he kept his eye glued on the door for Leslie. He half expected to see her come through, flattened straight out, like the coyote on Roadrunner. But she came in smiling, without so much as a black eye. She waltzed over to Mrs. Myers and whispered her excuse for being late, and Mrs. Myers beamed at her with what was becoming known as the Leslie Burke Special. How was he supposed to find out what had happened? If he tried to pass a note, the other kids would read it. Leslie sat way up in the front corner, nowhere near the wastebasket or pencil sharpener, so there was no way he could pretend to be heading somewhere else and sneak a word with her. And she wasn't moving in his direction, that was for sure. She was sitting straight up in her seat, looking as pleased with herself as a motorcycle rider who's just made it over 14 trucks. Leslie smirked clear through the afternoon and right on to the bus, where Janice Avery gave her a little crooked smile on the way to the back seat, and Leslie looked over at Jess as if to say, "See?" He was going crazy wanting to know. She even put him off after the bus pulled away, pointing her head at Maybelle as if to say, "We shouldn't discuss it in front of the children." Finally, in the safe darkness of the stronghold, she told him. "Do you know why she was crying?" "How am I supposed to know? Lord, Leslie, will you tell me? What in the heck was going on in there?" "Janice Avery is a very unfortunate person. Do you realize that?"
"What was she crying about, for heaven's sake?"
"It's a very complicated situation. I can understand now why Janice has so many problems relating to people."
"Will you tell me what happened before I have a hernia?"
"Did you know her father beats her?"
"Lots of kids' fathers beat 'em."
"Will you get on with it?" "No, I mean really beats her. The kind of beatings they take people to jail for in Arlington." She shook her head in disbelief. "You can't imagine." "Is that why she was crying? Just 'cause her father beats her?" "Oh, no. She gets beaten up all the time. She wouldn't cry at school about that."
"Then what was she crying for?"
"Well..."
Lord, Leslie was loving this. She'd string him out forever.
"Well, today she was so mad at her father that she told her so-called friends, Wilma and Bobby Sue, about it."
"Yeah?"
"And those two..." "Two..."
She looked for a word vile enough to describe Janice Avery's friends and found none.
"Those two girls blabbed it all over the seventh grade." Pity for Janice Avery swept across him. "Even the teacher knows about it." "Boy." The word came out like a sigh. There was a rule at Lark Creek, more important than anything Mr. Turner made up and fussed about. That was the rule that you never mixed up troubles at home with life at school. When parents were poor or ignorant or mean, or even just didn't believe in having a TV set, it was up to their kids to protect them. By tomorrow, every kid and teacher in Lark Creek Elementary would be talking in half snickers about Janice Avery's daddy. It didn't matter if their own fathers were in the state hospital or the federal prison. They hadn't betrayed theirs, and Janice had.
Do you know what else?
What?
I told Janice about not having a TV and everyone laughing. I told her I understood what it was like to have everyone think I was weird.
What'd she say to that?
She knew I was telling the truth. She even asked me for advice, as if I was Dear Abby.
Yeah?
I told her just to pretend she didn't know what on earth Wilma and Bobby Sue had said, or where they had got such a crazy story, and everybody would forget about it in a week.
She leaned forward, suddenly anxious.
Do you think that was good advice?
Lord, how should I know? Make her feel better?
I think so. She seemed to feel a lot better.
Well, it was great advice then.
She leaned back, happy and relaxed. Know what, Jess?
What?
Thanks to you, I think I now have 1 1/2 friends at Lark Creek School.
It hurt him for it to mean so much to Leslie to have friends. When would she learn they weren't worth her trouble? Oh, you got more friends than that.
Nope. 1 1/2. Monster Mouth Myers doesn't count.
There in their secret place, his feelings bubbled inside him like a stew on the back of the stove. Some sad for her, in her lonesomeness, but chunks of happiness, too. To be able to be Leslie's one whole friend in the world, as she was his, he couldn't help being satisfied about that. That night as he started to get into bed, leaving the light off so as not to wake the little girls, he was surprised by Maybelle's shrill little,
"Jess?
How come you still awake?"
"Jess, I know where you and Leslie go to hide."
"What do you mean?"
"I followed you."
He was at her bedside in one leap.
"You ain't supposed to follow me."
"How come?"
Her voice was sassy. He grabbed her shoulders and made her look him in the face. She blinked in the dim light like a startled chicken.
"You listen here, Maybelle Ahrens," he whispered fiercely. "I catch you following me again. Your life ain't worth nothing."
"Okay, okay."
She slid back into the bed.
"Boy, you're mean. I ought to tell Mama on you."
"Look, Maybelle, you can't do that. You can't tell Mama about where me and Leslie go."
She answered with a little sniffing sound. He grabbed her shoulders again. He was desperate.
"I mean it, Maybelle. You can't tell nobody nothing."
He let her go.
"Now, I don't want to hear about you following me or squealing to Mama ever again. You hear?"
"Why not?"
"'Cause if you do, I'm going to tell Billie Jean Edwards you still wet the bed sometimes."
"You wouldn't."
"Boy, girl, you just better not try me." He made her swear on the Bible never to tell and never to follow, but still he lay awake a long time. How could he trust everything that mattered to him to a sassy 6-year-old? Sometimes it seemed to him that his life was delicate as a dandelion. One little puff from any direction, and it was blown to bits. Chapter 8. Easter. Even though it was nearly Easter, there were still very few nights that it was warm enough to leave Miss Bessie out. And then there was the rain. All March it poured. For the first time in many years, the creek bed held water, not just a trickle either, enough so that when they swung across, it was a little scary looking down at the rushing water below. Jess took Prince Tarion across inside his jacket, but the puppy was growing so fast he might pop the zipper any time and fall into the water and drown. Ellie and Brenda were already fighting about what they were going to wear to church. Since Mama got mad at the preacher 3 years back, Easter was the only time in the year that the Ahrens went to church, and it was a big deal. His mother always cried poor, but she put a lot of thought and as much money as she could scrape together into making sure she wouldn't be embarrassed by how her family looked. But the day before she planned to take them all over to Millsburg Plaza for new clothes, his dad came home from Washington early. He'd been laid off. No new clothes this year. A wail went up from Ellie and Brenda like two sirens going to a fire.
"You can't make me go to church," Brenda said. "I ain't got nothing to wear, and you know it."
"Just 'cause you're too fat," Maybelle muttered.
"Did you hear what she said, Mama? I'm going to kill that kid."
"Brenda, will you shut your mouth?"
his mother said sharply. Then more wearily, "We got a lot more than Easter clothes to worry about." His dad got up noisily and poured himself a cup of black coffee from the pot on the back of the stove.
"Why can't we charge some things?" Ellie said in her wheedling voice.
Brenda burst in.
"Do you know what some people do? They charge something and wear it, and then take it back and say it didn't fit or something. The stores don't give them no trouble."
Her father turned in a kind of roar.
"I never heard such a fool thing in my life. Didn't you hear your mother tell you to shut your mouth, girl?"
Brenda stopped talking, but she popped her gum as loudly as she could just to prove she wasn't going to be put down. Jess was glad to escape to the shed in the complacent company of Miss Bessie. There was a knock.
"Jess? Leslie, come on in."
She looked first and then sat on the floor near his stool.
"What's new?"
"Lord, don't ask." He tugged the teats rhythmically and listened to the plink, plink, plink in the bottom of the pail.
"That bad, huh?
My dad's got laid off, and Brenda and Ellie are fit to fry because they can't have new clothes for Easter."
"Gee, I'm sorry. About your dad, I mean."
Jess grinned. "Yeah, I ain't too worried about those girls. If I know them, they'll trick new clothes out of somebody. It would make you throw up to see how those girls make a spectacle of themselves in church."
"I never knew you went to church."
"Just Easter." He concentrated on the warm udders. "I guess you think that's dumb or something." She didn't answer for a minute.
"I was thinking I'd like to go."
He stopped milking.
"I don't understand you sometimes, Leslie."
"Well, I've never been to a church before. It would be a new experience for me." He went back to work.
"You'd hate it."
"Why?"
"It's boring."
"Well, I'd just like to see for myself. Do you think your parents would let me go with you?"
"You can't wear pants."
"I've got some dresses, Jess Ahrens." "Would wonders never cease?" "Here," he said, "open your mouth."
"Why?"
"Just open your mouth." For once she obeyed. He sent a stream of warm milk straight into it.
"Jess Ahrens?"
The name was garbled, and the milk dribbled down her chin as she spoke.
"Don't open your mouth now. You're wasting good milk."
Leslie started to giggle, choking and coughing.
"Now, if I could just learn to pitch a baseball that straight. Let me try again."
Leslie controlled her giggle, closed her eyes, and solemnly opened her mouth. But now Jess was giggling so that he couldn't keep his hands steady.
"You dunce, you got me right in the ear."
Leslie hunched up her shoulder and rubbed her ear with the sleeve of her sweatshirt. She collapsed into giggles again.
"I'd be obliged if you'd finish milking and come on back to the house."
His dad was standing right there at the door.
"I guess I'd better go," said Leslie quietly.
She got up and went to the door.
"Excuse me."
His dad moved aside to let her pass. Jess waited for him to say something more, but he just stood there for a few minutes, and then turned and went out.
Ellie said she would go to church if Mama would let her wear the see-through blouse,
and Brenda would go if she at least got a new skirt. In the end, everyone got something new except Jess and his dad, neither of whom cared. But Jess got the idea it might give him a little bargaining power with his mother.
"Since I ain't getting anything new, could Leslie go to church with us?"
"That girl?"
He could see his mother rooting around in her head for a good reason to say no.
She don't dress right.
Mama,
his voice sounded as prissy as Ellie's.
Leslie's got dresses. She's got hundreds of them.
His mother's thin face drooped. She bit the outside of her bottom lip in a way Joyce Ann sometimes did, and spoke so softly Jess could hardly hear her.
I don't want no one poking up their nose at my family.
Jess wanted to put his arm around her the way he put it around Maybelle when she was in need of comfort.
She don't poke her nose up at you, Mama. Honest.
His mother sighed.
Well, if she'll look decent.
Leslie looked decent. Her hair was kind of slicked down, and she wore a navy blue jumper over a blouse with tiny, old-fashioned-looking flowers. At the bottom of her red knee socks were a pair of shiny brown leather shoes that Jess had never seen before, as Leslie always wore sneakers like the rest of the kids in Lark Creek. Even her manner was decent. Her usual sparkle was toned way down, and she said yes'm and no'm to his mother, just as though she were aware of Mrs. Aaron's dread of disrespect.
Jess knew how hard Leslie must be trying, for Leslie didn't say ma'am naturally.
In comparison to Leslie, Brenda and Ellie looked like a pair of peacocks with fake tail feathers. They both insisted on riding in the front of the pickup with their parents, which was some kind of a squeeze with Brenda's shape to consider. Jess and Leslie and the little girls climbed happily into the back and sat down on the old sacks his dad had put against the cab. The sun wasn't exactly shining, but it was the first day in so long that the rain wasn't actually coming down that they sang, "Oh, Lord, what a morning," "Ah, lovely meadows," and "Sing, sing a song" that Miss Edmonds had taught them, and even jingle bells for Joyce Ann. The wind carried their voices away from them. It made the music seem mysterious, which filled Jess with a feeling of power over the hills rolling out from behind the truck. The ride was much too short, especially for Joyce Ann, who began to cry because the arrival interrupted the first verse of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which after Jingle Bells was her favorite song. Jess tickled her to get her giggling again, so that when the four of them clambered down over the tailgate, they were flushed-faced and happy once more. They were a little late, which didn't bother Ellie and Brenda, for it meant that they got to flounce down the entire length of the aisle to the first pew, making sure that every eye in the church was on them, and every expression of every eye a jealous one. Lord, they were disgusting. And his mother had been scared Leslie might embarrass her. Jess hunched his shoulders and slunk into the pew after the string of women folks, and just before his dad. Church always seemed the same. Jess could tune it out the same way he tuned out school. With his body standing up and sitting down in unison with the rest of the congregation, but his mind numb and floating, not really thinking or dreaming, but at least free. Once or twice he was aware of being on his feet with a loud, not really tuneful singing all around him. At the edge of his consciousness, he could hear Leslie singing along and drowsily wondered why she bothered. The preacher had one of those tricky voices. It would buzz along for several minutes, quite comfortably. Then, bang, he was screaming at you. Each time Jess would jump, and it would take another couple of minutes to relax again. Because he wasn't listening to the words, the man's red face with sweat pouring down seemed strangely out of place in the dull sanctuary. It was like Brenda throwing a tantrum over Joyce Ann touching her lipstick. It took a while to get Ellie and Brenda pulled away from the front yard of the church. Jess and Leslie went ahead and put the little girls in the back and settled down to wait.
Gee, I'm really glad I came.
Jess turned to Leslie in unbelief.
It was better than a movie.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
And she wasn't. He could tell by her face.
That whole Jesus thing is really interesting, isn't it?
What do you mean?
All those people wanting to kill him when he hadn't done anything to hurt them.
She hesitated.
It's really kind of a beautiful story, like Abraham Lincoln or Socrates or Aslan.
It ain't beautiful, Maybelle broke in. It's scary. Nailing holes right through somebody's hand.
Maybelle's right. Jess reached down into the deepest pit of his mind. It's because we're all vile sinners God made Jesus die.
Do you think that's true?
He was shocked.
It's in the Bible, Leslie.
She looked at him as if she were going to argue, then seemed to change her mind.
It's crazy, isn't it? She shook her head. You have to believe it, but you hate it. I don't have to believe it, and I think it's beautiful.
She shook her head again.
It's crazy.
Maybelle had her eyes all squinched as though Leslie was some strange creature in a zoo.
You gotta believe the Bible, Leslie.
Why? It was a genuine question. Leslie wasn't being smarty.
'Cause if you don't believe the Bible...
Maybelle's eyes were huge.
God'll damn you to hell when you die. Where'd she ever hear a thing like that?
Leslie turned on Jess as though she were about to accuse him of some wrong he had committed against his sister. He felt hot and caught by her voice and words. He dropped his gaze to the gunny sack and began to fiddle with the raveled edge.
That's right, ain't it, Jess?
Maybelle's shrill voice demanded.
Don't God damn you to hell if you don't believe the Bible?
Jess pushed his hair out of his face.
I reckon, he muttered. I don't believe it, Leslie said. I don't even think you've read the Bible.
I read most of it, Jess said, still fingering the sack. It's about the only book we got around our place. He looked up at Leslie and half grinned. She smiled.
Okay, she said, but I still don't think God goes around damning people to hell.
They smiled at each other, trying to ignore Maybelle's anxious little voice.
But Leslie, she insisted, what if you die? What's going to happen to you if you die?
Chapter 9. The Evil Spell. On Easter Monday, the rain began again in earnest. It was as though the elements were conspiring to ruin their short week of freedom. Jess and Leslie sat cross-legged on the porch at the Burks, watching the wheels of a passing truck shoot huge sprays of muddy water to its rear.
That ain't no 55 miles per hour, Jess muttered.
Just then something came out of the window of the cab. Leslie jumped to her feet.
Litter bug!
She screamed after the already disappearing taillights. Jess stood up too.
What you want to do?
What I want to do is go to Terabithia, she said, looking out mournfully at the pouring rain.
Heck, let's go, he said.
Okay, she said, suddenly brightening. Why not? She got her boots and raincoat and considered the umbrella.
Do you think we could swing across holding the umbrella?
He shook his head.
Nah. We better stop by your house and get your boots and things.
He shrugged.
I don't have nothing that fits. I'll just go like this. I'll get you an old coat of Bill's.
She started up the stairs. Judy appeared in the hallway.
What are you kids doing?
It was the same words that Jess's mother might have used, but it didn't come out the same way. Judy's eyes were kind of fuzzed over as she spoke, and her voice sounded as though it were being broadcast from miles away.
We didn't mean to bother you, Judy.
That's all right. I'm stuck right now. I might as well stop. Have you had any lunch?
It's all right, Judy. We can get something ourselves.
Judy's eyes focused slightly.
You've got your boots on.
Leslie looked down at her feet.
Oh, yeah, she said, as though she were just noticing them herself. We thought we'd go out for a while.
Is it raining again?
Yeah.
I used to like to walk in the rain. Judy smiled the kind of smile Maybelle did in her sleep.
Well, if you two can manage. Sure. Is Bill back yet?
No, he said he wouldn't be back until late, not to worry. Fine, she said.
Oh, she said suddenly, and her eyes popped wide open. Oh.
She almost ran back to her room, and the plinkety-plink of the typewriter began at once. Leslie was grinning. She came unstuck. He wondered what it would be like to have a mother whose stories were inside her head instead of marching across the television screen all day long. He followed Leslie up the hall to where she was pulling things out of a closet. She handed him a beige raincoat and a peculiar round black woolly hat. No boots. Her voice was coming out of the depths of the closet and was muffled by a line of overcoats.
How about a pair of clumps?
A pair of what? She stuck her head out between the coats.
Cleats. Cleats.
She produced them. They looked like size 12s. Nah, I'd lose them in the mud. I'll just go barefoot.
Hey, she said, emerging completely. Me too.
The ground was cold. The icy mud sent little thrills of pain up their legs, so they ran, splashing through the puddles and slushing in the mud. P.T. bounded ahead, leaping fish-like from one brown sea to the next, then turning back to herd the two of them forward, nipping at their heels and further splashing their already sopping jeans. When they got to the bank of the creek, they stopped. It was an awesome sight. Like in the Ten Commandments on TV when the water came rushing into the dry path Moses had made and swept all the Egyptians away. The long dry bed of the creek was a roaring 8-foot-wide sea, sweeping before it great branches of trees, logs, and trash, swirling them about like so many Egyptian chariots, the hungry waters licking and sometimes leaping the banks, daring them to try to confine it.
Wow.
Leslie's voice was respectful. Yeah. Jess looked up at the rope. It was still twisted around the branch of the crabapple tree. His stomach felt cold.
Maybe we ought to forget it today. Come on, Jess, we can make it.
The hood of Leslie's raincoat had fallen back, and her hair lay plastered to her forehead. She wiped her cheeks and eyes with her hand and then untwisted the rope. She unsnapped the top of her coat with her left hand.
Here, she said, stick P.T. in here for me.
I'll carry him, Leslie.
With that raincoat, he'll slip right out the bottom.
She was impatient to be gone, so Jess scooped up the sodden dog and shoved him rear first into the cave of Leslie's raincoat.
You gotta hold his rear with your left arm and swing with your right, you know. I know, I know.
She moved backward to get a running start.
Hold tight. Good gosh, Jess.
He shut his mouth. He wanted to shut his eyes, too. But he forced himself to watch her run back, race for the bank, leap, swing, and jump off, landing gracefully on her feet on the far side.
Catch!
He stuck his hand out, but he was watching Leslie and P.T. and not concentrating on the rope, which slipped off the end of his fingertips and swung in a large arc out of his reach. He jumped and grabbed it, and shutting his mind to the sound and sight of the water, he ran back and then speeded forward. The cold stream lapped his bare heels momentarily, but then he was into the air above it and falling awkwardly and landing on his bottom. P.T. was on him immediately, muddy paws all over the beige raincoat, and pink tongue sandpapering Jess's wet face. Leslie's eyes were sparkling.
Arise, she barely swallowed a giggle. Arise, King of Terabithia, and let us proceed into our kingdom.
The King of Terabithia snuffled and wiped his face on the back of his hand.
I will arise, he replied with dignity, when thou removes this fool dog off my gut.
They went to Terabithia on Tuesday, and again on Wednesday. The rain continued sporadically, so that by Wednesday the creek had swollen to the trunk of the crabapple, and they were running through ankle-deep water to make their flight into Terabithia. And on the opposite bank, Jess was more careful to land on his feet.
Sitting in cold, wet breeches for an hour was no fun, even in a magic kingdom. For Jess, the fear of the crossing rose with the height of the creek. Leslie never seemed to hesitate, so Jess could not hang back. But even though he could force his body to follow after, his mind hung back, wanting to cling to the crabapple tree the way Joyce Ann might cling to Mama's skirt. While they were sitting in the castle on Wednesday, it began suddenly to rain so hard that water came through the top of the shack in icy streams. Jess tried to huddle away from the worst of them, but there was no escaping the miserable invaders.
"Dost know what is in my mind, O King?"
Leslie dumped the contents of one coffee can on the ground and put the can under the worst leak. "What?"
"Methinks some evil being has put a curse on our beloved kingdom."
"Damn weather bureau." In the dim light, he could see Leslie's face freeze into its most queenly pose, the kind of expression she usually reserved for vanquished enemies. She didn't want a kid. He instantly repented his unkingly manner. Leslie chose to ignore it.
"Let us go even up into the sacred grove and inquire of the spirits what this evil might be and how we must combat it. For of a truth I perceive that this is no ordinary rain that is falling upon our kingdom."
"Right, Queen," Jess mumbled and crawled out of the low entrance of the castle stronghold. Under the pines, even the rain lost its driving power. Without the filtered light of the sun, it was almost dark, and the sound of the rain hitting the pine branches high above their heads filled the grove with a weird, tuneless music. Dread lay on Jess's stomach like a hunk of cold, undigested doughnut. Leslie lifted her arms and face up toward the dark green canopy.
"Oh, spirits of the grove," she began solemnly, "we are come on behalf of our beloved kingdom, which lies even now under the spell of some evil, unknown force. Give us, we beseech thee, wisdom to discern this evil, and power to overcome it."
She nudged Jess with her elbow. He raised his arms. He felt the point of her sharp elbow again.
Yes, please listen, thou spirits."
She seemed satisfied. At least she didn't poke him again. She just stood there quietly, as if she was listening respectfully to someone talking to her. Jess was shivering, whether from the cold or the place, he didn't know. But he was glad when she turned to leave the grove. All he could think of was dry clothes and a cup of hot coffee and maybe just plunking down in front of the TV for a couple of hours. He was obviously not worthy to be King of Terabithia. Who ever heard of a king who was scared of tall trees and a little bit of water? He swung across the creek, almost too disgusted with himself to be afraid. Halfway across, he looked down and stuck his tongue out at the roaring below.
"Who's afraid of the big bad wolf, tra-la-la-la-la?"
he said to himself, then quickly looked up again toward the crabapple tree. Plodding up the hill through the mud and beaten-down grasses, he slammed his bare feet down hard. "Left, left," he addressed them inside his head. "Left my wife and 49 children without any gingerbread. Think I did right, right, right by my..."
"Why don't we change our clothes and watch TV or something over at your house?"
He felt like hugging her. "I'll make us some coffee," he said joyfully. "Yuck," she said smiling, and began to run for the old Perkins place. That beautiful, graceful run of hers that neither mud nor water could defeat. It had seemed to Jess, when he went to bed Wednesday night, that he could relax, that everything was going to be all right. But he awoke in the middle of the night with the horrible realization that it was still raining. He would just have to tell Leslie that he wouldn't go to Terabithia. After all, she had told him that when she was working on the house with Bill. And he hadn't questioned her. It wasn't so much that he minded telling Leslie that he was afraid to go. It was that he minded being afraid. It was as though he had been made with a great piece missing. One of Maybelle's puzzles with this huge gap where somebody's eye and cheek and jaw should have been. Lord, it would be better to be born without an arm than go through life with no guts. He hardly slept the rest of the night, listening to the horrid rain, and knowing that no matter how high the creek came, Leslie would still want to cross it. Chapter 10. The Perfect Day. He heard his dad start the pickup. Even though there was no job to go to, he left every morning early to look. Sometimes he just hung around all day at the unemployment office. On lucky days, he got picked up to unload furniture or do cleaning. Jess was awake. He might as well get up. He could milk and feed Miss Bessie and get that over with. He pulled on a T-shirt and overalls over the underwear he slept in.
Where are you going?
Go back to sleep, Maybelle.
I can't. The rain makes too much noise.
Well, get up then.
Why are you so mean to me?
Will you shut up, Maybelle? You'll have everyone in the whole house woke up with that big mouth of yours. Joyce Ann would have screamed, but Maybelle made a face.
Oh, come on, he said.
I'm just going to milk Miss Bessie.
Then maybe we can watch cartoons if we keep the sound real low.
Maybelle was as scrawny as Brenda was fat. She stood a moment in the middle of the floor in her underwear, her skin white and goosebumpy. Her eyes were still drooped from sleep, and her pale brown hair stuck up all over her head like a squirrel's nest on a winter branch. That's got to be the world's ugliest kid, he thought, looking her over with genuine affection. She threw her jeans into his face.
I'm going to tell Mama.
He threw the jeans back at her.
Tell Mama what? How you just stand there staring at me when I ain't got my clothes on?
Lord, she thought he was enjoying it. Yeah, well, he said, heading for the door so she wouldn't throw anything else at him. Pretty girl like you, can't hardly help myself. He could hear her giggling as he crossed the kitchen. The shed was filled with Miss Bessie's familiar smell. He clucked her gently over and set his stool at her flank and the pail beneath her speckled udder. The rain pounded the metal roof of the shed so that the plink of milk in the pail set up a counter rhythm. If only it would stop raining. He pressed his forehead against Miss Bessie's warm hide. He wondered idly if cows were ever scared, really scared. He had seen Miss Bessie jitter away from PT, but that was different. A yapping puppy at your heels is an immediate threat. But the difference between him and Miss Bessie was that when there was no PT in sight, she was perfectly content. Sleepily chewing her cud, she wasn't staring down at the old Perkins place, wondering and worrying. She wasn't standing there on her tippy toes while anxiety ate holes through all her stomachs. He stroked his forehead against her flank and sighed. If there was still water in the creek come summer, he'd ask Leslie to teach him how to swim. How's that? He said to himself. I'll just grab that old terror by the shoulders and shake the daylights out of it. Maybe I'll even learn scuba diving. He shuddered. He may not have been born with guts, but he didn't have to die without them. Hey, maybe you could go down to the medical college and get a gut transplant. No, Doc, I got me a perfectly good heart. What I need is a gut transplant. How about it? He smiled. He'd have to tell Leslie about wanting a gut transplant. It was the kind of nonsense she appreciated. Of course. He broke the rhythm of the milking long enough to shove his hair out of his face. Of course, what I really need is a brain transplant. I know, Leslie. I know she's not going to bite my head off or make fun of me if I say I don't want to go across again until the creek's down. All I got to do is say, Leslie, I don't want to go over there today. Just like that. Easy as pie. Leslie, I don't want to go over there today.
How come?
How come? Because Because... Well, because... I called you 3 times already. Maybelle was imitating Ellie's prissiest manner. Called me for what?
Some lady wants you on the telephone. I had to get dressed to come get you.
He never got phone calls. Leslie had called him exactly once, and Brenda had gone into such a song and dance with her about Jess's getting a call from his sweetheart that Leslie had decided it was simpler to come to the house and get him when she wanted to talk.
Sounds kind of like Miss Edmonds.
It was Miss Edmonds.
Jess?
Her voice flowed through the receiver.
Miserable weather, isn't it?
Yes'm. He was scared to say more for fear she'd hear the shake.
I was thinking of driving down to Washington, maybe go to the Smithsonian or the National Gallery. How would you like to keep me company?
He broke out in a cold sweat.
Jess?
He licked his lips and shoved his hair off his face.
You still there, Jess?
Yes'm. He tried to get a deep breath so he could keep talking.
Would you like to go with me?
Lord. Yes'm.
Do you need to get permission?
She asked gently.
Yes, yes'm.
He had somehow managed to twist himself up in the phone cord.
Yes'm, just a minute.
He untangled himself, put the phone down quietly, and tiptoed into his parents' room. His mother's back made a long hump under the cotton blanket. He shook her shoulder very gently.
Mama?
He was almost whispering. He wanted to ask her without really waking her up. She was likely to say no if she woke up and thought about it. She jumped at the sound, but relaxed again, not fully awake.
Teacher wants me to go to Washington to the Smithsonian. Washington?
The syllables were blurred.
Yeah, something for school.
He stroked her upper arm.
Be back before too late, okay? Don't worry, I done milking.
She pulled the blanket to her ears and turned on her stomach. Jess crept back to the phone.
It's okay, Miss Edmonds, I can go.
Great! I'll pick you up in 20 minutes. Just tell me how to get to your house. As soon as he saw her car turn in, Jess raced out the kitchen door through the rain and met her halfway up the drive. His mother could find out the details from Maybelle after he was safely up the road. He was glad Maybelle was absorbed in the TV. He didn't want her waking Mama up before he got away. He was scared to look back even after he was in the car and on the main road for fear he'd see his mother screaming after him. It didn't occur to him until the car was past Millsburg that he might have asked Miss Edmonds if Leslie could have come, too. When he thought about it, he couldn't suppress a secret pleasure at being alone in this small, cozy car with Miss Edmonds. She drove intently, both hands gripping the top of the wheel, peering forward. The wheels hummed and the windshield wipers slicked a merry rhythm. The car was warm and filled with the smell of Miss Edmonds. Jess sat with his hands clasped between his knees, the seat belt tight across his chest.
"Damn rain," she said. "I was going stir crazy."
"Yes'm," he said happily. "You too, huh?" She gave him a quick smile. He felt dizzy from the closeness. He nodded.
"Have you ever been to the National Gallery?"
"No, ma'am." He had never even been to Washington before, but he hoped she wouldn't ask him that. She smiled at him again.
"Is this your first trip to an art gallery?"
"Yes'm."
"Great," she said. "My life has been worthwhile after all."
He didn't understand her, but he didn't care. He knew she was happy to be with him, and that was enough to know. Even in the rain, he could make out the landmarks, looking surprisingly the way the books had pictured them. The Lee Mansion high on the hill, the bridge, and twice around the circle so he could get a good look at Abraham Lincoln looking out across the city, the White House and the monument, and at the other end, the Capitol. Leslie had seen all these places a million times. She'd even gone to school with a girl whose father was a congressman. He thought he might tell Miss Edmonds later that Leslie was a personal friend of a real congressman. Miss Edmonds had always liked Leslie. Entering the gallery was like stepping inside the pine grove. The huge, vaulted marble, the cool splash of the fountain, and the green growing all around. Two little children had pulled away from their mothers and were running about, screaming to each other. It was all Jess could do not to grab them and tell them how to behave in so obviously a sacred place. And then the pictures. Room after room, floor after floor. He was drunk with color and form and hugeness, and with the voice and perfume of Miss Edmonds always beside him. She would bend her head down close to his face to give some explanation or ask him a question, her black hair falling across her shoulders. Men would stare at her instead of the pictures, and just felt they must be jealous of him for being with her. They ate a late lunch in the cafeteria. When she mentioned lunch, he realized with horror that he would need money, and he didn't know how to tell her that he hadn't brought any. Didn't have any to bring, for that matter. But before he had time to figure anything out, she said, "Now, I'm not going to have any argument about who's paying. I'm a liberated woman, Jess Ahrens. When I invite a man out, I pay." He tried to think of some way to protest without ending up with the bill, but couldn't, and found himself getting a $3 meal, which was far more than he had meant to have her spend on him. Tomorrow he would check out with Leslie how he should have handled things. After lunch, they trotted through the drizzle to the Smithsonian to see the dinosaurs and the Indians. There, they came upon a display case holding a miniature scene of Indians disguised in buffalo skins, scaring a herd of buffalo into stampeding over a cliff to their death, with more Indians waiting below to butcher and skin them. It was a three-dimensional nightmare version of some of his own drawings. He felt a frightening sense of kinship with it. "Fascinating, isn't it?" Miss Edmonds said, her hair brushing his cheek as she leaned over to look at it. He touched his cheek. "Yes'm." To himself he said, "I don't think I like it." But he could hardly pull himself away. When they came out of the building, it was into brilliant spring sunshine. Jess blinked his eyes against the glare and the glisten. "Wow," Miss Edmonds said. "A miracle! Behold the sun!" I was beginning to think she had gone into a cave and vowed never to return, like the Japanese myth. He felt good again. All the way home in the sunshine, Miss Edmonds told funny stories about going to college one year in Japan, where all the boys had been shorter than she, and she hadn't known how to use the toilets. He relaxed. He had so much to tell Leslie and ask her. It didn't matter how angry his mother was, she'd get over it. And it was worth it. This one perfect day of his life was worth anything he had to pay. One dip in the road before the old Perkins place. He said, "Just let me out of the road, Miss Edmonds. Don't try to turn in. You might get stuck in the mud." "Okay, Jess," she said. She pulled over at his road. "Thank you for a beautiful day." The western sun danced on the windshield, dazzling his eyes. He turned and looked Miss Edmonds full in the face. "No, ma'am." His voice sounded squeaky and strange. He cleared his throat. "No, ma'am. Thank you. Well," he hated to leave without being able to really thank her, but the words were not coming for him now. Later, of course, they would, when he was lying in bed or sitting in the castle. "Well," he opened the door and got out. "See you next Friday." She nodded, smiling. "See you." He watched the car go out of sight, and then turned and ran with all his might to the house, the joy jiggling inside of him so hard that he wouldn't have been surprised if his feet had just taken off from the ground the way they sometimes did in dreams and floated him right over the roof. He was all the way into the kitchen before he realized that something was wrong. His dad's pickup had been outside the door. but he hadn't taken it in until he came into the room and found them all sitting there. His parents and the little girls at the kitchen table, and Ellie and Brenda on the couch. Not eating. There was no food on the table. Not watching TV. It wasn't even turned on. He stood unmoving for a second, while they stared at him. Suddenly his mother let out a great shuddering sob.
"Oh, my God! Oh, my God!"
She said it over and over, her head down on her arms. His father moved to put his arm around her awkwardly, but he didn't take his eyes off Jess.
"I told you he'd just gone off somewhere," Maybelle said quietly and stubbornly, as though she had repeated it often and no one had believed her.
He squinted his eyes as though trying to peer down a dark drain pipe. He didn't even know what question to ask them.
"What?" he tried to begin.
Brenda's pouting voice broke in.
"Your girlfriend's dead, and Mama thought you was dead, too."
This ends Disc 3.